守ってくれ。ジークスリードワン、リオン榊、発進する。
So it's May 2014, and we've got a couple of special guests here for this episode of Macross Speaker Podcast. And this episode's topic is going to be pretty much all about Macross 30. Macross 30 and Macross 30 only. So if you want news or Richard's latest new scripts for the new Macross series,
please see
past episodes. So with me today, I have a regular contributor, Renato.
Hello.
And for the first time here on the Speaker Podcast, we have Andrew.
Hello.
And Kyle.
Hey, how's it going?
So, Andrew and Kyle, it's...
Sorry, this is the first time I'm speaking to Kyle, so... hi, how are you doing?
Nice to meet you, Sorry, Renato.
I was busy just now. I just came in literally still drenched in sweat, so I can't... I can't really do any good first impressions, but bear with me. I'll get back on track in a second.
No worries.
It's okay. We always appreciate your very nice sounding voice.
Thank you very much. I'll sing for you.
So, all right. So, Andrew and Kyle, it's both your first time on the cast. So, would you mind telling the audience who you are, why you're into Macross, and what you do?
Kyle can go first.
Oh, why? Thank you. I'm Kyle, known as Falcon KPD on the Macross World forums. I'm more of a recent fan. I've watched Macross in chronological order for my first time, so that was my introduction to the series. And I don't know. I guess I'm kind of one of those new fans that people talk about every now and then.
You mean the ones that supposedly don't exist?
And he likes things.
I know, right?
All right, Andrew.
All right, I'm Andrew. You know me on the forums as VF5SS, or VF. I'm a writer and podcaster on CollectionDX.com, and sometimes I make parts to fix your Valkyrie toys.
As I mentioned, we're here today mostly to talk about Macross 30. Why Macross 30 and why now? Well, apart from the fact that the game has the power to bring strangers together, as it is for this this podcast... It's been, what, a good 16 months since the game came out. We're looking at Bandai's Wife 30 coming out in August. And I still seem to get a lot of questions about what the game's about, whether it's importable, whether it's any good, etc., etc. So, you know, I thought it was an idea to get a couple of people together and, you know, talk about what we thought of the game. So, as a starting point, I'd like to ask each and every one of you. I'll start with you, Renato. How long have you played the game for?
In total?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's like 50 or 60 hours, because like, you get a timestamp or something, right?
Well, you finished it once at least.
I finished it once. It's overall, I'd say like a month... Or 2 months in total, because I played it just after it came out, and then I got really busy for most of 2013, and I only started playing it again like a year later in March this year, and then and that's when I completed it and got to the next like round two.
So in terms of hours, and you're looking about 50-60 hours you've put into it.
Yeah, it's not that much, I think.
Just out of curiosity, how does that compare to the amount of time you put into the PSP games?
I don't know. It might be about the same. No, it's probably more, because at least the PSP games, you know, I play them on the train. And since I'm always on the move, like, where I work, like, every day it's a different place. So some train journeys are pretty long. And that's basically what I do. Sometimes I play games. Sometimes I play crappy anime that I've recorded off TV. Breakblade. Breakblade is pretty good.
I was gonna say I'm enjoying Breakblade.
Breakblade is really good. I meant Knights of Cydonia and Captain Earth. Ugh. Sorry, Captain Earth and Knights of Cydonia fans.
Knights of Cydonia has the bear. Okay, I like.
That's why. That's if it didn't have the bear, it would be a million times better. I can't bear the bear.
Hey, you're a fan of Orgus. Orgus has a dinosaur.
Yeah, but it's a cartoon. that is drawn and not made by 3D polygons saying, this is realistic, this is hardcore.
I don't... Oh, you guys have weird advertising because it's clearly just the same as 80s anime where it's just silly and has sci-fi.
I know, right? Yeah, I know. If it didn't have this attitude of, no, we are serious and we are going to show you what it's like to tell a gritty story. You want Destroids? These are kind of like Destroids. If it wasn't like that... then I'd probably be enjoying it, like a bit more lighthearted tone, like Break Blade.
Well, Break Blade also has a 12-year-old who's more stacked than...
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
So, Andrew, how long would you say you've put into the game?
Well, I was playing it this afternoon, and it said I have 70 hours on it.
Nice. Is that, what, a playthrough and a half or something like that?
Yeah, it's like a playthrough and a half.
Mm. Gotcha.
I went from normal to ultimate difficulty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And, so Kyle?
I'm about the same as Andrew at this point. I got it back in January after college, and, I've been putting as much time into it as I can, and I'm about into my... I'm about halfway into my second playthrough right now, so... Mm. It's good fun.
I would like to add that mine has been blessed thrice over by, Mariajima, Hidetaka Tenjin, and Yoshiki Fukuyama.
Cool.
So jelly.
So it's like you're automatically max stats, right, when you log in?
I wish. It's just good luck.
I should say something I remember from a few months ago. Kyle actually sent me a message saying, I just got the game, and I'm like, okay, I hope you enjoy it. And then, like, not 2 weeks later, Kyle said, just complete the game. Like,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
was pretty impressive, I should say.
Oh, why? Thank you. I kind of blew through my first playthrough, and I've been.
Yeah, because at first you don't want to, you know, do all the stuff. You just want to get to the next part of the story, right?
Right. I was so good at the game that I just blew right through it without having to do any of the side quests. So.
Yeah. You know, Macross 30, as you guys are all aware, you know, it was originally announced back in. 2012, September 22nd to be precise, during the Tokyo Game Show. That date stuck in my mind because I actually had to work that day, but I was working at the Tokyo Game Show. And yeah, so basically I kind of abused my work privilege and got into the Bandai Namco presentation area a little earlier, so I got a front row spot when they made the announcement. So it was announced on September 22nd, 2012, and the announcement was this video, which was...
Was that on Nico Video? Nico Nico Doga?
That was the one after it, I believe.
Okay, sorry.
But yeah, so basically you just had a bunch of, you know, words on the screen and a bunch of still shots.
Mm-hmm.
Like a still shot of Hikaru and Minmay, a still shot of Sharon Apple and Isamu, and no idea what system, what genre. And a lot of people were just, after that, everyone was just speculating, you know, it's probably just a smartphone dating game, you know, which could have been good, I guess. But it wasn't. And on February 28th, 2013, the game came out on the PS3, not on the 360. I know a few people wanted the 360 version. This is Japan. We do not do 360. So the game's made by ArtDink. And Renato, I know you're kind of familiar with their... background, some of their past works, right?
Well, obviously they did the PSP Macross games, and I was wondering what they were doing before that, and I actually,
Gundam PSP games?
yeah, the Gundam PSP games as well, of course. But it's funny, I'm interested in retro gaming, so every so often I go through all these stores that have secondhand things, and a lot of ArtDink's old stuff is usually kind of, like, SimCity kind of things, where you build your own, or you manage your own army or something like that. I don't know. So I found it rather interesting that they would tackle like these hyper-dynamic action games.
Well, you know, everyone has to start somewhere. I mean, Bethesda started off doing the NES Home Alone game.
Did they really do that? Wow.
Yeah, that's Bethesda.
So basically they start off doing a lot of sim kind of games, is what you're telling me, Renato.
From what I could tell.
But they really made a name for themselves on the PSP, right?
Yeah, like Andrew said, they started releasing these Gundam games. And I think they were rather popular, but I didn't play any of them. So when Macross Ace Frontier was announced, people assumed that it was based on the Gundam game engine. I'm not sure how accurate that is. I think they handle slightly different.
They do handle differently. In the Gundam games, the space missions are terrible.
Right.
Because the controls are just awful. They're like the Versus games for arcade and PS2.
Okay.
So.
You played them?
Yeah, I played Gundam Battle Universe. I've been playing through that.
Right.
And I think, Andrew, you've just started playing some of the older Macross games on the PSP, right?
Yes.
Just briefly, I mean, how are you finding those? Going in the opposite order, because most people have gone, you know, from the PSP stuff to the PS3 stuff. How's it feel going backwards, per se?
There are things I like about it better than Macross 30. I kind of like how fast you are and how high you can jump with your robots. I always like that with, like, Armored Core games. It is a little bit annoying that you don't really have a second analog stick to look around with. I do like that you can do more, like, actual dogfighting in the PSP games, like a proper, almost Ace Combat-style game.
Okay, what's the difference there? I mean, why do you think that's doable on those titles and not Macross 30?
It's kind of a matter of scale. I mean, it's very small 3D models on very simple backgrounds that are big, but they don't have a lot in them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of easier to do that on a smaller system, and they don't really expect you to have, like, highly detailed models like they do in Macross 30, which is... We can get into why there aren't as many Valkyries in Macross 30 as there is in the PSP games.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, I know Macross 30 had a somewhat interesting development history. And when I say no, I mean I'm inferring. Because ArtDink went from the PSP titles to doing these pack-in games, these hybrid discs, that came out with the Frontier movies initially, not with the re-release that came out earlier this week. And also with the Blu-ray remaster of Do You Remember Love? And, sorry, just out of curiosity, who here has played any of those?
I have not, personally.
I have the Sayonara no Tsubasa one and the Do You Remember Love one.
Now, I know that each time they've done one of these, Renato, it's been more of a... How do I put it? Bandai Visual did this big promotion over here about these hybrid discs, and they didn't just do them with Macross, you know, they did them with...
There's like Eureka 7 as well. Eureka 7 AO.
Dot Hack?
Dot Hack, right.
Yeah, they did a Dot Hack
Brave
fighting game.
Story, maybe? Or is that something else?
They've been trying to add value to these discs, and it's been working because until they announced the reissues of the movies, even secondhand, I found that the Frontier movies kept their value longer. That's not to say they didn't drop secondhand like everything in Japan does, but I think they kept their value a little longer because they had these games in them, I think.
Okay, well, that's not true anymore. Even though
not anymore, no.
Even though the new re-releases don't have the games anymore, you can still find copies of like Itowari no Otohime for like 500 yen Blu-ray, brand new.
Oh, wow.
And to put that in context, Renato, I should have clarified. I think the Sayonara no Tsubasa one kept its value better because the game was also in a more polished state.
Because it was a game, and the other one was more like a joke, like a beta test or something. You couldn't even save, from what I hear.
No, you couldn't. That's correct.
And most of the missions had nothing to do with the story. The Sayonara no Tsubasa one allowed you to play through the story of the first movie and the second movie. Mm-hmm. And I should mention here, before I forget, that the Sayonara no Tsubasa disc is the one that first features the Isamu YF-29 and the Ozma YF-29 and, what is it, the Clan Red VF-25S. So all these things that appear later on, they actually made their debut in the previous game. It's called Last Frontier, the one that comes with Sayonara no Tsubasa. The one that comes with Do You Remember Love is called... My Boyfriend is a Pilot, 2012. So,
I think the one with the false diva is Trial Frontier?
Trial Frontier, yes.
So it's like a demo. It's a trial.
It's a trial, right. So that's why people were excited when that came out. And they said, well, we're going to get the full game. We're going to get the full game. But they never announced it. Well, right, they didn't announce it until much later. But now we have.
Right, and it seemed fairly obvious that these were stepping stones for ArtDink to get used to the PS3 well, coding and architecture. Yeah. Of course, it's not like the PS3 was a new system, but many Japanese developers went straight from the PS2 era to PSP and DS and 3DS. HD gaming took a lot longer to take off here. So it was almost like a subsidized development process as far as I can see, because there was minimal risk for them putting these kind of demos out, and yet they were getting to build the assets for what would eventually become a full game. So it was a somewhat unique and pretty interesting development process from the standpoint of a consumer now looking at how it's all turned out. But as to why this was necessary, I think I should point out here that, you know, we always, well, Renato, as you well know, we sit here and talk about Macross for three hours at a time, but it is still a very niche property. And to put things in perspective, the combined sales for Macross 30 only recently scraped past the 100,000 unit mark.
Hmm.
Now, to put that in context, Robotech Battlecry across all platforms topped 1 million copies.
Okay, well, hang on. That's not context, really, because it gives you... I mean, you're comparing the Japanese market with the American market. There's a huge number of base users in the American market anyway. So I don't think that's a fair comparison. You should compare it like to Gundam games here or something like that.
But then again, the best-selling Gundam games in Japan very seldom get released outside of Japan, so it's a tough comparison to make. Of course, I'm comparing a smaller market to a larger market, but just in terms of, you know, people are always saying, well, why don't we get more games for Macross in Japan? Where's the PlayStation 4 game for it? Just taking into account that Japan, it is a niche market, and it is a niche within a niche, and because we had this staggered kind of development process, we got this HD game, but in a niche market where it only sells 100,000 copies, I don't think it would have gotten greenlit to just being made outright without this staggered process.
Right. They had to test the water or something like that.
Yeah. Mm. And, you know, I suppose what I'm saying with that comparison is more that, you know, there's no way it's going to sell that much in Japan. I mean, we get all these events and merchandise and whatnot here, but it is still a very niche property.
Yeah. I don't think it helped that the cover of the game features little girls, because you said when exactly, Gwyn, you said that when it was first announced, people thought, oh, it might be a dating sim or something. Even when it was on store shelves, people probably thought it was a dating sim.
Well, for some people, that might be a selling point.
That's true. Yeah, maybe that was what was behind that.
I know this might sound silly, but the cover to the PS3 version of Muffled Alternative has more robots than Macross 30. That is a visual novel.
Yeah.
Well, there were two variants of the posters in stores, Renato. One was a poster of the limited edition box art by Tengen, and the other one was a poster of all the girls.
But that wasn't if you went to stop into stores that actually had posters that were proactively promoting the game. Remember, Gwyn, you live in Akihabara, or at least close to there.
Actually, so I didn't live in Akihabara. Like, when this came out, I went back down to my local game shop where I used to live, because in Akihabara, you're less likely to get that happening, I find.
Because
there's so
out.
Much coming out. Mm-hmm. There's so many niches they have to cater to, whereas my local game shop back from where I lived down near Kamata, they completely filled their entire window full of Macross for that week. That was the launch title they picked on, because launch titles in Japan come out, you know, every Thursday is the release date for new games, and they completely plastered their front window with Macross 30. It was great.
Hmm.
But look, let's move on. So the game came out, and now that we've all played it, look, I want to touch on characters and then get into a bit of the story first. And guys, if you have any comments on characters, feel free to jump in while I'm going over these. Our main character is Leon Sakaki. Now,
or is it Rion? Because
that's you beat me to it, Renato.
Sorry.
I kind of question naming the main character after like the villain from Frontier.
Right, but that's why. That's the thing. The villain from Frontier in katakana is Leon Mishima, and this character is Leon. And we've seen the villain from Macross Frontier being romanized with L-E-O-N, but when you see the loading screens in Macross 30 and you see like the prophecy or something, it says RS special. So the R must stand for Rion, and S obviously Sakaki, right? So I think it's a different name.
Going by the official guide, it's R-I-O-N.
Yeah, no, and as I expected it to be.
But that's a stupid name. If you go by Wikipedia, they misspell his last name even in Wiki.
What?
But they spell it as Sagaki, not Sakaki.
Okay.
So either
this
way,
is the Japanese Sakaki, Wikipedia?
No, this was like
the English one.
The English Wikipedia.
Okay. Well, who knows who wrote that?
Yeah, that's true. Now Leon is a member of the SMS Sephira branch, who travels to the planet of Ouroboros, as we'll get to. Now, didn't someone have a comment on Leon here? In these
boring
notes?
It's to identify with the main character, or it's for the player to identify with the main character more easily, of course.
Yeah, but he's like, he's written like any friggin', you know, visual novel protagonist or a light novel protagonist. He's just kind of like sardonic and detached, and girls lead him around all day.
That's interesting, because I actually had the opposite reaction. I thought he was more interesting than Alto.
Yes.
And,
well,
I will say
that. Also like that, because he's just like a prize for two girls to fight over.
Yeah.
Well, I found that Leon at least, you know, had no qualms about getting the job done. There was very little hesitation about things. He knew his job. He was a soldier. Well, a pilot first and foremost.
I think rather than Leon, or Rion, whatever we want to call him, his rather than his personality... I think he became an interesting character for me in terms of his background and his relationship with the other characters that is later told in flashbacks, right? So as you find out more about his past, he becomes more of an interesting character. At first, there's not really that much to grab you from him.
The thing I like about Leon is most Macross protagonists, they usually start off as like a young, inexperienced pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And Leon, he's already a squadron leader. He's he was a NUNS pilot, and you know, he's been around the block a few times.
He's at least as experienced as you are. That's you, yes, you.
Oh, you as in what? The VFX?
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay.
And so. Next in the lineup, we have Aisha Blanchett, who is the head of SMS Ouroboros branch, which is on a ship, the Gefion.
It's one of those Bolognese types.
Yeah.
Yeah, great name.
And I think, well, she's resident head of the local SMS, she's Centrati, she's a grease monkey.
She's a genius beauty.
Yeah. Her shirt has buttons that are made out of hypercarbon.
Right.
Well, and also she has glasses in her cleavage all the time because her boobs are nearsighted or something.
She has glasses?
She does.
Yeah.
I don't remember her.
And then we have Mina Forte, who voices Mina, Renato?
Haruka Chisuga.
Oh, damn it, you're no fun.
Haruka Chisuga.
Thank you very much.
There you go. The winner of Miss Macross 30 contest, and we'll get into Mina a little more later. On the other side, we have Rod Baltimore.
Rod Stewart.
Who was, with that hair, who was a childhood friend of Leon's originally. We have Commander Todo, who's well, he's the head of a special ops unit from the new UN Spacey. And then we have... May Leon. Now, who was it that liked
Leon? I think Leon is amazing.
You want to tell me what's so great about Leon?
That's the thing.
I like her shiny white VO-27.
Yeah, that's a very cool paint scheme. I don't know.
I like how she always calls him, you know, Leon-chan.
Yeah. It's like... The two main girls in the love triangle are like, you know, oh my god, I love you, Leon. You know, and then...
Leon! Like in Resident Evil.
Yeah, yeah. And then...
Okay, I had a problem with May... What's her name? Leon,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
More than anything, it was... I just thought it was rather racist. Well, because...
You make a good point, Renato.
She's talking in this broken English, and clearly... And she's talking in these, like, manga anime tropes of what Asian or, like, Chinese people sound like when they try to speak Japanese, where no one really actually does speak like this. So just her voice and her mannerisms were quite grating whenever she was on the screen, but...
I found her quite adorable.
She carried on like Kawamori's legacy of having, you know, young-looking Chinese girls in his story.
Yeah, but none of them ever spoke the way she does.
She did speak in very wrong, kind of broken Japanese, which was half written in katakana for emphasis on how bad her accent was.
Domo desu, Leon-chan!
So I think that's the main bulk of the cast, so let's talk about story a bit, which is, I know, the part of the game that really hasn't been discussed that much. The one thing that strikes me about Macross 30 is whether it be written form, whether it be videos on YouTube, or whether it be podcast, there's not much in the way of discussion about the story, or just general reviews of the game. It seems that there was a lot of hype before it came out, a little bit of confusion after it came out when everyone was looking for a walkthrough, and then silence.
Well, I don't think people expected it to be so dense in this term of story. I thought it was going to be something like the PSP games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just more open world.
But then again, they were advertising it as an action RPG.
Well, I think...
I think people didn't know what it meant, maybe.
Like someone like shooting myself, RPG. I was like... Oh, it's going to be just Macross 2.
Ooh, that is low.
I love Just Cause 2.
So, well, let's touch on some story here, Renato, and feel free to jump in and back me up or tell me I'm wrong here at any point.
You'll probably remember it better than I can, sorry. But yeah, I'll try.
Well, it's the year 2060, and you know what? That is the most important thing about the story. The fact that they've already anchored it in the date, and they mention straight off the bat that it's 1 year after the conflict with the Vajra. And the planet Ouroboros, being close to the center of the Milky Way, is kind of a frontier planet. But frontier due to this strange phenomenon, this Ouroboros aurora, which is a fold warp aurora which envelops the planet and prevents anything less than a Macross class ship from getting on and off planet easily. Yeah. Now, this aurora isn't always occurring. When it occurs, it can happen from anything from a couple of weeks to a year or two. But it's been getting worse as of late. Now, this phenomenon restricts the delivery of supplies, of new Valkyrie parts, of information even. It can screw up communications. Now, Leon Sakaki folds into the proximity of this planet, and he's on a mission, very simple mission, which is to deliver a 25 to the Ouroboros branch for their R&D lab, being basically Aisha. The main thing that he's delivering is really the AI that helps with the piloting, not so much the machine itself, although the idea is the machine be delivered intact. Mm-hmm. Having said that, he gets shot down by an unknown mysterious 29 before even getting within the atmosphere of the planet, and crash lands. Now, he awakes having been retrieved by Aisha on board the Gefion, and she's actually... It's already taken the AI out of his wrecked 25, and actually has wrecked his 25 more. She's actually disassembled the wreckage because she's a grease monkey. So there's no way, he doesn't have a plane to get back. Which is beside the point, because after he crash lands, the aurora occurs again and pretty much traps him on the planet. So he's trapped on the planet, and Aisha's like, well, you know, this is SMS. We're just going to transfer you to the Ouroboros branch here for as long as it takes. You know, you'll get paid and you'll work for me. And it turns out that her hobby is, apart from being a grease monkey, is investigating these ruins, which, like, honeycomb the planet. Mm-hmm. And these are from a previous civilization. And it's not clear at first what civilization this is.
Gee, I wonder.
Yeah.
Now, the aurora, I've got to point out, also, you know, it cuts off sections of the planet from each other. So there's, you know, there's a desert area, an ice area, and the main one that you land on, which is an archipelago of islands and floating islands, which obviously came straight out of Macross Zero.
Floating as in midair.
In midair, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that happens in Arbor Core as well. Come on now.
Well, these ruins, we find out they're influencing people. Zentradi workers who are, you know, digging and excavating and digging around near these ruins are basically going insane and running amok. Even SMS or New UN Spacey pilots with too much exposure to these ruins kind of start attacking each other. So there's obviously something going on.
Renato, it's the hate plague.
Oh, yay! No one is innocent!
No one is innocent.
Yes. Please continue.
So among this, one of the ruins they're investigating, Aisha and Leon, Leon uncovers Mina, who's asleep in what looks like a stasis pod. And he has to retrieve her because they encounter a new type of guardian in these ruins. Guardians are like automated.
Are they like go
walks? That's a good one.
So like in Sidonia?
Well, you know what I mean, Andrew, right? These green fluorescent things that are in all the space ruins,
bugs.
Right?
Those things,
the space bugs, yeah.
I really like those. I like those designs much better than the Vajra from Macross Frontier, though. There's something more interesting. Yeah, there's something more interesting about those ones to me.
Well, they're glowy.
I guess I'm all about the bright colors. Yeah.
So they encounter another one of these. You have to destroy all these guardians inside the ruins, and they encounter this larger guardian which self-destructs after they defeat it, blowing a hole in the floor and cracking open, like messing up the systems for Mina's stasis pod. So they rescue her and get her back to the ship, and she has no idea who she is or what she does or what she's doing there or how old she is. And so the plot of the game, initially at least, is finding out who Mina is. Eventually what you find out is that she is not... Oh, hang on, I'd better put this in here. Spoilers! For anyone who hasn't guessed by this point, we're going to have spoilers for the plot. At this point, we're still up to stuff you could glean from trailers. So, yeah, spoilers, people. We find out that she's not of the protoculture. She is from an ancient civilization which inhabited the planet Ouroboros, and when her civilization was there, basically the protoculture were already long gone.
So is this just another like humanoid race like the Zola?
Pretty much. Because I know at one point when Tordor visits the Gefion, Aisha does her best to lie about who Mina is because she doesn't want to give away her origins. So as time goes on, we find out there are actually six of these special ruins among all the ruins throughout the planet, and each one has to be activated by a separate song. Not necessarily a specific song, but a different song. They're powered by, you know, song energy.
Depending on what MP3 you're using.
Exactly.
It might be Chasing the Angels, it might be The Touch, you know.
It might be the Tetsujin Niju Hachigo soundtrack, like I did.
Throw a little Queen in there or something.
Yes.
And so what the ruins do, they call out throughout space and time, transcending space and time, and gather all the greatest vocalists, all the greatest singers throughout Macross's history to be used to activate them. So this is how we get this all-star Macross cast, as the trailer's referred to. Now, I have to point out here that this is as sound a setup as any Super Robot Wars game, basically.
I was about to say, it's about as good as any SRW game.
Yeah, I agree.
It sounds that, you know, for example, you get, of course, Alto and Cheryl first, because there's going to be probably more younger Frontier fans playing this game.
Of course.
And these characters are the main draw for them to buy it. You run into them first, and they actually mentioned they were mid-fold. They were folding somewhere. So they're in fold space when they got yoinked over to this planet, and 1 year into the future. So by this technique, all the singers have been yoinked from somewhere. It's not like this is the Minmay as she would be in 2060 when she finally shows up. She's been yoinked at a certain point in the plot, you know. Same goes for Shin, same goes for Milan, etc., etc. You know, it's a very gamey kind of gimmick they used to get everyone together.
Here's something. So they've all been taken from specific points in the series that they appeared in, right? Minmay is wearing her final stage outfit from Do You Remember Love, right? Now, does that mean that there is no one singing on the SDF-1 bridge now while they're fighting Godolza? And they managed to prevent the...
it depends on whose time travel rule you're using, you know. Is it Back to the Future rules, or is it, you know...
Never really explain that, but I guess we'll go into that as well later on.
Using this technique, different, you know, Macross singers and characters pop up, and pretty much every character is folded into this planet with a supporting character. So, you know, if it's Myung, Isamu, and Gold are going to show up. If it's Sarah, you know, Shin's obviously going to be there, etc., etc. And so the game then basically walks you through this plot where you're getting all the characters together, activating all the
ruins.
There is
one omission, though, that some people took offense to.
What on earth could that be?
No Roy Fokker.
Mm.
Either version.
I was going to say Lisa Hoyley, but go on.
Yeah, she'd be cool. She doesn't get enough love.
No.
Yeah,
I was going to complain they didn't hire Gubaba's voice actor.
I love how no one's mentioning Ishtar.
Who?
Yeah, right.
Is she part of the Milky Dolls?
Yes.
No, Jamming Cruz, dude.
Yeah, and what was the reason for not including Roy? The reason that they gave, right, remember Gwyn, was that... no, because he would have been dead by that point in the story. But they could have just taken him from Macro Zero.
Right. I've heard either they could have him... They couldn't call him into it because he'd either be dead, or if they called younger Roy, that, of course, people are going to tell him he's going to die.
Well, we're all going to die.
You know, it's as much... logic as anything else in the game.
Well, yeah, but then that's again, BS. And it stinks of, like, you know, Roy was a Kamiakira, either didn't want to do it, or they couldn't hire him, or there was some problem, or he was ill or something, because he has been ill a while.
Well,
it's kind of funny as you get into the game, it's clear, like, which actor had more free time on their hands.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Because I noticed Milane is in it very early.
Yeah.
And she's missing for, like, most of the game.
Yeah.
Well,
it's like, what has Thomas Sakurai been doing? I have no idea.
This. That's it.
Well, I mean, the whole idea that, you know, Roy could be told of his imminent death could be applied to, you know, Macross 7 Max talking to Hikaru about, you know, his whole 2012 incident.
Right.
But that's...
Yeah. So it seems very, you know, pick and choose, selective logic. But that applies around the whole game, really. But so as you go on, you know, not all characters arrive together. For example, Milan is immediately separated from Basara. She gets there separate from Basara and gets picked up by yes, by Kamujin, who says to her, "Hey, I know your parents, little girl. come and hang out with me." And he can't remember her name, which is what I found hilarious. He just calls her Daughter of Myria, which I suppose that's kind of awesome.
That's cool.
But, you know, Chiron... Who the hell brought Chiron into this world? I'm sorry. Oh, damn. What did I just do?
There's my response. I don't know what that is.
Who on earth brought Kamujin into this world is what I'm asking. Because he doesn't sing, last I checked.
Yeah. Chiron has... Chiron, Jesus Christ, stop. My God. So Kamjin has a bigger role than, I would say, even Hikaru or... who else? Maybe Basara. Gamlin, definitely. I don't remember any lines that Gamlin had. Kamjin is pretty prevalent.
Well, because Kamjin allies with that other guy. What's his face?
Todo. Ganes. Oh, Ganes, right, yeah. Yeah.
Right, so there is, you know, a whole lot of mixing and matching with the characters. So Milan's looking for, you know, Basara. Alto and Cheryl are looking for Ranka to see if she's being folded to this planet as well. In what's kind of a kick in the pants for Misa, she and Hikaru are looking for Minmay, which has kind of got to suck. no one knows where Myun is, really. Sarah just kind of rocks up and is just there, not really concerned about where Shin is. And pretty much half the cast of Frontier turn up, immediately get brainwashed by Sharon Apple, and turn to the dark side. So, yeah, there's a lot of this back and forth, and these kind of... This is how they managed to do, you know, some versus scenarios where you get some interesting interplay between the characters. It's nothing particularly deep, which I suppose is what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah.
But it's all leading up to what the villains of the piece are doing. Now, the villains, surprise, surprise, are Havamal, which is Commander Tordor's special ops unit from New UN Spacey.
Yeah, the real surprise is that Havamal has recruited Shin from Macross Zero.
Right. Renato, do you want to tell us about Havamal's goals? Because I think you had a few comments to make about those.
Oh, really? Well, we'd be rushing to, like, the end of the movie. Of the movie. The game. Mostly watching stuff. if that's okay, just rush to the end. So, what they want to do is they want to use the fold energy or something, the Aurora energy, to control the timeline. And the main guy, Todo, he wanted to prevent the destruction of the Earth in 2012.
Right. He
wants
a world where Macross never happened.
2010, in episode 27 of the original Macross. The people who knew of this plan went along with it, like the people in Macross Zero. Why? Because they know that they're going to get blown up. Right, the people who do not go against that plan, go with that plan, are the people who were born after, because they took advantage of the emigration fleets conquering other worlds. But the thing is that really such a bad thing?
Well,
I don't know.
I appreciate that it's like a kind of a gray area, but you know, it's sort of like, again, time travel.
You shouldn't mess with the past, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, but what are you preventing? Like, if there's no destruction of Earth, what if there's no Basara to save us from the Protodevilin?
Yeah.
So.
They would have to use the
Chamber
Birds. Yeah,
maybe, but we've already established that it doesn't really affect anything, because Minmay is there, and, you know...
Yeah, well,
it would have affected...
a silly video game. I definitely got the impression that the actual, like, new characters were very much the focus, and, you know, I think a lot of Western fans just thought that, you know, this is going to be about, like, celebrating everything, and by everything we mean, like, SDF, Macross, and Plus.
Right. Whereas they're the ones that actually don't have that much of a following anymore here.
Yeah. Just to jump back to your previous point, though, Renato, I think Shin's reaction is actually one of the most... relatable moments of the game, really.
Yeah,
the most
I agree.
Believable.
Yes.
Because he's being shown this footage of the Earth being destroyed, and to him, there is no question. He doesn't care who he's fighting against. He's like, well, if we have to do this, like, to him, he's being approached by this guy from the future who's saying, the Earth gets destroyed, help me stop it. That sounds like a good guy.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. You know, as far as he's concerned.
Mm.
So I think that's a really interesting twist. And I kind of wish they had played with the ambiguities more, but as Andrew pointed out, it's just a stupid game.
Well, also, you know, the game has to get made, and they have to kind of condense things down and just make a story at the end of it.
Yeah.
Right.
I'll just say, as a Westerner, like somebody who doesn't speak Japanese... This night has been very, very educational about this game for me, because I am learning so much in so little time. But continue.
Well, thank you.
My favorite part of the game is when Cheryl wants to call Sarah Obachan.
Well, among the characters, the other dynamic, of course, is with the new characters, with Leon and Rod. And the way that plays out is that Rod was originally the boyfriend of Leon's sister, Mia. And all three of them were pilots in the military, not in SMS initially. And 2 years prior to this game, so around 2058, their base on the planet Sephira got attacked by a rogue fleet of Zentradi. And it took them a while, basically started a small war, and they managed to win, but Leon's sister Mia was killed. And he has not really heard from Rod since that time, but he couldn't deal with the military, Leon, after this, so he joined the SMS. He pretty much did an Isamu.
And then Setsuna FSA could never forgive Saji Crossroad ever again. Wait, no, I'm sorry.
Exactly. And Rod is joined up with Toto and Havamal because he's like, well, if I do this, I can have a world where Mia doesn't die. Of course, there's no guarantee she'd even be born.
Right,
but let's not let that get in the way. That's his basic driving motivation. I found it interesting that this dead character's boyfriend was the driving motivator here, whereas her brother was trying to just forget it and start this new life in the SMS.
Well, that's kind of what I meant. Like, learning about all that background stuff makes Leon more interesting.
Oh, so that's what you were referring to earlier.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Right. So that's where, you know, Rod's motivation comes from and Tordor's motivation comes from, you know. Then you have, with regards to Aisha, for example, she's, you know, as you mentioned, Zentradi, and it's interesting. The first time Tordor visits her, because she's in contact with Tordor and Havamal, because they're also investigating these ruins, but, you know, she doesn't think anything of it. They've been on the planet for a little while, and they're cool with exchanging information. She doesn't know why they're excavating the ruins, which is quite different to her own purposes. But the first time he visits the Gefion to have a talk with her about what she's doing, he mentions, oh, I just, you know, noticed you're Zentradi, right? And she's like, yeah. And he just, you see this, the corners of his mouth just go down, like this little frown, which I completely didn't pick up on. And then when I went back through the game, it's like, oh, of course, this guy wants to completely stop anything Zentradi related and stop the Earth getting wiped out. So cooperating with Aisha, who's Zentradi, must kind of, you know, not be the easiest thing for him to do.
It's hard for him to tell because he doesn't have pointy ears.
Yeah. True. Aisha, why is she investigating these ruins? Well, she says that, you know, her people, the Zentradi, of course, don't really even now have much of their own culture. So she's fascinated by other civilizations' culture, and by going through these ruins is trying to learn more about what the original Zentradi and protoculture culture would have been, because there's no real record of any of that. And this is also why she's obsessed with taking, or so she says, illegal, like, secret movies and pictures of Mina and putting them on the internet, because she wants to record her culture and her life and not get fanboys to pay for videos she's taken. But that's the excuse she uses, at least. All the characters have this kind of motivation, which, granted, is doled out very sparingly, but does come up over the course of the game, which it makes, as you said, Renato, the new characters really interesting. And I think we should point out that these characters don't seem to be that throwaway, as is often the case in these kind of games, because in last year, the Macross Fan Club birthday card, which they send birthday cards out to everyone, had Leon front and center and among all the other pilots.
And yet still no Hibiki.
So we touch just briefly on what actually happens at the end then, Renato?
Yes, the goodies win. Or rather, the people that we are led to believe should be the goodies win.
Well, that's the thing. So basically, the Earth gets screwed, right?
Yeah.
But the goodies win.
Yes.
Oh, it's kind of depressing if you think about it.
Hey, you know what? There was that episode of Doctor Who where he could have stopped the genesis of the Daleks, but he didn't because it would have led to far more good in the universe than bad. That's like one of very few episodes I've seen, but whatever.
That's totally retardless.
It's funny because...
So the end battle is... The end battle is just as many things in this game. I mean, this is... I can't talk about this game without talking about the whole Japanese notion of, like, a festival. Because this is a Macross festival. This is the story that would have otherwise been in an anime, I suppose, in some alternate reality of what the 30th anniversary anime would have been. It's just this crossover where they take everything and put it into this blender, and they take every trope as well, and with a very tongue-in-cheek kind of approach, they use them all. So the end battle is very much that typical, well, the end villain, which is Toto, of course, ends up being pretty much the exact same position as Grace, you know, complete with cords and tentacles and stuff as in these ruins and this power, and he ends up in this great big like enemy body, and you know, trapped within him, much like in Macross Zero, Aisha and Mina, and you have to fly up and actually break them out of where they are trapped inside of him in these clear bubbles, much like you do to Ranka, or Alto did for Ranka in the first Frontier movie, and then you fly back and take him down. You know, and at the end of all this, the ending you get comes down to one tiny thing, which is one girl's on his front and one girl's on his back. If a certain amount of time elapses, and I think it's like a minute or 2 minutes, in between rescuing the girls, the one you rescue first is the ending you get. But if you rescue them both within like a minute of each other, you get the ending where... I suppose it's an Alto ending, I guess. I got the Mina ending, which to me is the correct one. But what did you guys get?
I went for Aisha first, so I think I got her ending.
Okay, Renato?
Yeah, I didn't know that there were different endings. I only found out when I saw a YouTube video. I think I got the Aisha ending.
Carl, do you remember what you got?
I was just so OP that I got the three-way ending in the first try.
Well, I would have gotten that. Honestly, I didn't know the difference when I was actually doing it, but I got hung up in the geometry for about 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's a little rough sometimes.
Trying to fly over that boss, so if it wasn't for the geometry, I would have gotten the threesome ending. But as it was, I think Mina's the correct one. And if you're wondering, you know, the Mina ending is basically that she's going to end up with Leon, and she becomes a singer, and she's got like a top 10 hit when the game finishes, like on Ouroboros, granted, and who knows how much their pop culture can be communicated throughout the galaxy network. I suppose it can be more now that the Aurora is supposedly gone after the story ends. But yeah, you find out whatever happens between Leon and the girl you're with, and Tortle's gone, and then they don't, in the Mina ending at least, say a damn word about what happened to everyone. It's just like, well, I suppose they all got teleported back.
No, they didn't say anything in any ending, I think.
Renato, did they say anything in the book?
I don't have the book. I've read really bad reviews of the book on, like, Amazon.com.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently it's terrible. It doesn't have all the secrets and everything. The walkthroughs are much more detailed on the internet, made by fans. And, you know, they spend way too many pages on just screen caps of the loading screens, which are tiny.
You know what I like about those loading screens?
Yeah.
How, like, two of them are just, like, Aisha and Mina, just, like, their faces looking for a kiss.
Oh, yeah, they did that on the PSP games as well, remember?
Yeah, but I don't think they had their eyes closed.
No, I think a few of them did.
Okay.
Well, Renato, I know that the book you're referring to is the guidebook, by the sounds of it. I've gone through that and there was nothing in there. And I found that to be more of a technical stat book. The walkthroughs were pretty useless.
Oh, are you talking about the novelization?
The novelization, yeah.
I haven't checked that.
No, I haven't either.
Richard has that.
Probably.
Might have to ask him. So as far as I know, they never even try to explain what happened to everyone. So it's just, you know, well, we presume they all got teleported back, probably without the memories, going by, you know, Super Robot Wars kind of standards. Yeah, but that's it. I mean, the focus of the game is really these new characters. So let's take a step back and look at some of the details then, because it was really the interplay between characters and the details in the game that, I don't know, made it fun for me. I mean, was there anything that jumped out at you guys? I mean, Andrew, you mentioned the Obachan moment, but was there anything
actually,
else?
Yeah, actually, because I recently replayed that part, and it's funny because Sanae Kobayashi kind of forgets who she's playing from one line.
Okay.
And then goes back to like, oh, I'm supposed to be stone-voiced Sarah. Not like...
mm-hmm.
She sounded more like Kathy for a little bit there.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went back to, oh, I am actually the priestess of the wind. Whatever. Actually, it's weird. Kathy isn't in the game, and she could have just been.
Yeah, it's true. I actually think that Sarah was... How do I put it? A lot of the characters aren't acting in character in this. They're more or less the caricatures of their own characters, in a way. Sarah does not bat an eyelid at the fact that she's, A, on this whole other planet when she
right.
never had been off the island.
Yes, yes. She was shocked at electricity, but when she's going to an alien planet, she's, like, totally nonplussed.
Yeah. That kind of just blew my mind. I'm like, yeah. Sarah, what happened to you?
And I think you're onto something with the whole their caricatures of characters, because Hikaru, I mean, obviously it's not the same voice actor, but they give him all these lines that are like otakura SMS だろ, you know.
Oi,
kikoeru
ka?
Otakura
SMS no hikotai daro?
So da. Sochira no shosoku wa SDF1 Tsukaru shotai shosoku. Ichijou Hikaru chuui da. 協力してほしいことがあるんだけど着艦を頼めるかな。SDF1、そんなまさか。一条注意、通信を変わります。SDF1マクロス航空管制主任早瀬美佐少佐です。ハンターキルドからこちらのことを聞きました。聞いていただきたい話が着艦の許可をお願いします。マクロスだったら信じられねえ。了解。
Hikaru only spoke like that maybe in the first couple of episodes. It wasn't like his signature thing. So this is another one of the things like the pineapple where they just take the tropes and run with them.
Right.
And like blow them out of proportion a little bit. Because Hikaru did not call everyone otaku.
Hikaru was played by Kenji Nojima, who played Hikaru in the PSP
games
and... also, Another Century's Episode 2.
Yeah.
So he's been the standard...
game, right?
Well,
but I'm not talking
about
the voice actor. I'm talking about the script itself. It's his
How
lines.
Do you think his delivery was? I mean, no one nails
Doesn't
Hikaru
sound anything
somehow.
Like Hikaru at all, but what are you going to do?
But yeah, you know, I mean, Basara turns up briefly at first. Leon runs into him when Leon has some engine troubles.
Basara's very mellow.
And, well, Basara just like, yeah, hey, and... Leon's like, sing us a song. So he sings him a song. And he's like, I really like this the song this planet's singing. It's calling out to me. And I'm out of here again. Bye. And he just goes away and comes back for the last battle to help boost Leon's Valkyrie to get him through a force field.
Yeah, because there's a whole section of the game where you're supposed to look for Basara, and you're asking around these different towns, have you seen this guy with a guitar? And you think you're going to get to him, but then they say, oh, we can't find him. Well, never mind, let's go on to the next chapter in the story. That was weird.
Well, I think that's just them doing, as you mentioned previously in other podcasts, Renato, like, Basara is so strong, so powerful, that they can't just have him as a regular character. He's like an instant win
button.
Right,
yeah.
So they only bring him in the end, you know. Yeah,
because it was his. Deus Ex Basara. Because it was his like sound. what is it, SoundCloud? What do you want to call it? The sound booster thing, the energy that helped put the YF-30 through some barrier that was surrounding the the final boss.
Toto's.
And so
over 300,000 cheapest sound units.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. And as far as voice actors go, I mean, Andrew, you mentioned earlier how it seemed like Sakurai Tomoe had the most time on her hands. I was actually a little... I was really impressed by the amount of voice in the game, how it was fully voiced, more or less, with the exception of some subquests. But I was really shocked that a lot of the actors weren't really in character. It's almost like they forgot how to do their own characters in a way. I mean, Kanna wasn't sounding that Basara-ish. He was just sounding like himself. Sakurai Tomoe was just kind of sounding like a middle-aged Milen. Milen doesn't speak how Sakurai Tomoe was delivering those lines, you know. Isamu was good, Gold was fine, the Zero cast were fine, the Frontier cast, of course, were fine. I think the outstanding role, even though she only had a handful of lines, was probably Mari Ijima's Minmei.
Oh, she sounded in character, yeah.
Yeah, I was shocked that she sounded that much in character.
Me too, yeah. Because you can say, you know, I was about to say to you, well, Gwyn, you know, it was 20 years ago since they made Macross Plus and Macross 7, so, you know, give them a break. But yeah, you know, Mari Ijima, she still can do the voice with no problem.
Mimi!
Hikaru!
Is it really Hikaru? Mimi!
Well, I mean... those other characters have been in crossover games more recently, so I don't know why that...
It might have something to do with voice direction, I don't know.
I think it probably did.
And didn't you find the volume levels for some actors were higher than others? I remember Basara being quite a low, difficult to hear over the background music, but when Leon was saying his lines, you know, this is in the same scene as Basara, his lines were much clearer, so...
I did sort of notice that at times, but it didn't, like, bother me or anything.
What did you guys think of the actual use of the crossover, though? I think, personally, that they could have done more with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they just tried to get a flavor of each era and just kind of mix them together a little bit.
They did have some interesting crossover moments, like Captain Max meeting Hikaru for the first time. I don't really know what was said, but I could tell by the tension in Sho Hayami's voice that things were getting interesting.
Of course, you had the Milen, like, coming up against her parents who are both brainwashed by Sharon Apple at that point. Things like that. I was expecting a little bit more in the crossover between the characters. More of those moments, like, as you said, Andrew, the Obachan moment with Cheryl.
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to think if there was another good movement. I mean, they just did, like, some old callbacks with Plus, with the joke about, I bought you lunch 13 times.
Right.
Yeah.
This leads back into the kind of being caricatures of the characters, in a way. I've got to ask, what the hell was the go with Cheryl's hair and Ranker's hat? Like, did they choose the two most... unappealing headshots, head artwork for these two characters? Like, when those windows opened up, it's like, oh, hey, there's a window of hair. There's a face in there somewhere. But and Milen's head was huge compared to everyone else.
Some of them were kind of dumb. I mean, most of the icons, well, not most, but like many of them changed, right? You had helmet heads and you had heads without helmets or whatever. But, for example, Gold was always in his YF-29, even when he was inside the ship. That was kind of weird.
Right.
I noticed that Gubaba didn't blink when he was on Milen's shoulder, even though Milen did.
Yeah.
He didn't have a single sound effect either.
No. They couldn't bring back the Gubaba voice actor, obviously. He's very busy.
Well, that's it. I mean, I'm returning this. I want my Gubaba. Man. I mean, hell with Fokker. We need more Gubaba in our game.
My one random comment about all like the one non-voiced NPC, the guy with the brown hair.
Yeah, yeah.
He looked like Yuya Bridges from Love Love.
What is that thing around his neck anyway? Is it like a cat snake or something?
Oh, Garnus?
Garnus.
Oh, I thought you were talking about somebody else. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah, Garnus.
Yeah, it's
like the one-eyed thing, right? I thought it looked a bit like the pet from Dynamite 7.
It looks a bit, but it's not the same thing. Yeah. It's got this huge tongue as well.
Hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't have one eye, does it? It's got two, like, antennae.
Yeah, yeah, it's got two little...
It should be like the rabbit thing from Trash.
Yeah, and the hamster from, like, Macross the First or whatever.
It's a ferret.
It's a ferret, whatever.
What's the deal with that thing?
Did you, Renato, notice that in the actual rec room on the Gefion, which was where the bulk of the conversations happened, in between missions, the entire cupboard spanning the background of that screen was one big liquor cabinet?
Yes, I did.
I was like, wow, Aisha must be getting drunk, like, on duty pretty much every day.
Yeah, I think they did that because they wanted to recreate, like, the interior of the Macross Quarter, in a way. Because then they have a bar, too. Mm. But yeah, I mean, the point is, it's just her, so what the... Lonely nights.
Yeah, I mean, did we touch on the reason it was just her? Because a lot of the crew were on vacation. She was running on the skeleton crew at that point of the year. And then the Aurora kicked in.
But then it doesn't make sense that they wouldn't have any other Valkyries in there. Oh, and here's the problem that I had. Like, she said, no, we don't have any Valkyries for you, sorry. You can't leave even if the Ouroboros Aurora wasn't blocking everything. And Leon says, well... And then, you know, we find Mina in the ruins. And we take her back to the ship and says, here you go, have a VF-11. Wouldn't Leon say, what the hell, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
Well, at that point, you were building them.
Well, wasn't Leon, like, really rustled that, you know, Aisha just pulls out this VF-19E out of nowhere? Like,
yeah, but that's because that's her, so I can understand that. But, like, Mina, you know...
I suppose, you know, Aisha was cobbling some together in her spare time, you know. It's,
I guess.
I've got to admit, though, I was fairly impressed, I guess, at how the game tried to cover both its gameplay and technical limitations with actual things pointed out in the plot.
Yeah.
Apart from the whole unlocking system for building Valks, you know, they were like, well, we have, you know, minimal supplies, we have to cobble these Valkyries together, so the easiest paths to get are for these old VFOs and VF0s and VF1s, which are actually replicas. They were popular a while back. It's like, okay, well, they've kind of explained how that all works. And then you have things like, well, all the energy running through these ruins is fold energy, which is why when you touch the stone that marks the entrance to a cave, there's no actual opening to a cave to get into these ruins. You touch the stone and you teleport in. No, that doesn't mean we need to load the level in. That means you teleport in, you fold in, because they're using fold energy.
Right.
And the whole, you know, barriered environment is also just because, there's a Ouroboros, you know, what is it? Aurora fold thing. So that's why you can't. So, you know, they've done the same thing as Orgus, effectively.
Well, they even explained the hunter license thing, which was a very, really sketchy explanation, I thought. But because, you know, they hide part of your training or one of your early missions as Leon getting his hunter guild license to do side quests and to help out Aisha. But then, you know, when you get Mina along with you, it's like, well, Mina's flying along with you now. What about her license? And they actually explain that in that, oh, any group undertaking a mission, as long as the one person in the group has a license, it covers everyone in the group. We just heard that Aisha wanted Leon to get a license because she had a lot of shit she wanted him to do. And she wasn't intending on going with him. It's like, okay, that you've just explained away why, you know, neither, you know, Isamu or Hikaru, none of these characters need hunter licenses to come along with you on these missions.
Well, I thought Isamu probably got one because he was, like, racing for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, I'm not sure whether that's the same as the guild stuff, but yeah, you could be right.
Now, I'm kind of unclear on what the Hunter's Guild actually does.
They're just, like, mercenaries and they do stuff.
They're just like a PMC, kind of like SMS.
Kind of, because it's the SMS or the NUNS doesn't have that much of a jurisdiction over these new planets. So it's kind of like a Wild West sort of situation.
Alright, alright.
From what I got.
That makes sense.
You may say it's a new frontier.
Oh! Oh! Oh!
Shall we get into gameplay a bit, gentlemen?
Okay. Gameplay is pretty good. You know, it's a little slower than the PSP games, but I think some of that's because it's more of a exploratory RPG. And you do spend a lot of time, like, in dungeons and underground bases, and they probably don't want you to slam into the ceiling every time you jump. Mm. But it happens anyway.
The way that Girl Walk handles is a little bit different to the PSP games as well, right?
Because in the PSP games, you're always flying forward in Girl Walk unless you stop yourself.
Yeah.
Mm.
And in these games, you can just move around in every direction without... Yeah.
Technically, I'll get the two minus negative points out of the way, but the two things that immediately hit me when I first turned on the game was A, the lack of inertia.
Yeah.
You transform to Bataroid and you just drop like a rock at 90 degrees. which, I mean, once you get used to it, it's fine, but I kind of wanted to work that inertia into, you know, transforming and fighting, and the fact that you can't. Yeah. It makes fighting easier, but it's not really what I wanted to do. And also, of course, this game must be made for Alto, because if Alto thinks his sky on the frontier is too low, he's really going to have a problem on Ouroboros where the sky is really damn low.
I have to wonder if they were planning on having, like, more fields. Like, one that was in space or one that was a sky.
Right.
That's a possibility.
It is really low, isn't it?
The altitude is capped at about the same as Agile Warrior. Well, Andrew, you'll understand this.
Oh, I know Agile Warrior. F-111X.
About 1,000 feet, approximately. Mm. So, like, 300 meters.
I would have liked a little bit more, because at the very least, I was hoping their skybox would get to the point where if there's a floating island there, you can at least stand on top of it, even if you can't maybe get much higher than that. Yeah, to have land masses there and not let you actually get to the top and have visual cue that you won't be able to. Yeah. I mean, I'm not suggesting they put those annoying red barriers in that they put in during restricted missions, but... I mean, even if they made a comment like, well, you can't fly any higher because of the aurora, well, that would at least explain it, but they didn't even put that in.
Well, you wanted to just fly at the top of the what was it, the Britai City?
Mm. Oh, yeah, that, or the tree, that giant tree thing they've got in... Actually, is it just me, or was the initial stage where, like, the archipelago, was that the most interesting stage, or was that just me?
For me, it was the most interesting, yeah.
Hmm. I kind of enjoyed the Sierra Desert myself, but...
Okay. I like the desert because you can watch your Bataroid walk around.
Well, and you also get... That's true. You get more Destroid action, too, right?
Yeah.
You get a lot more monsters. Well,
there's no Destroids in the game. What are you talking about? What do you
mean? Well, okay, you get more monsters, I should say. There's a bunch of... Of Kanix in the desert stage.
Anyway, going back to just the previous point about how low the ceiling is, I think I recall that the other hybrid pack games, like Last Frontier and My Boyfriend's a Pilot 2012, they actually have higher ceilings, even in the ground-based missions. And of course, there's space missions too. I seem to remember that, you know, you've got Macross Frontier City, and you can probably go up much higher than you can in Macross 30. Then again, I haven't played those games in a while, so...
Isn't part of the problem that this is an open-world game?
Yeah, exactly, right. So that's another thing that's the limitation. Yeah.
With no load times other than, going between... like interiors of places.
Yeah. So it's perfectly understandable. So I didn't have so much of a problem with that.
Well, honestly, given the developers' inexperience with the platform, they don't have the best optimization team. I mean, look at the slowdown that you get.
Those boss fights are awful. I can't tell what is going on when it slows down to like
so much lag.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Kyle, I know you play a lot of Ace Combat. Andrew, I know you play a lot of mecha games in general. Looking at this from a strictly gamer perspective, as opposed to a Macross fan, I would have to say it's like a PlayStation 2.5 game in many respects. There's a lack of interactivity with the environment, and a lot of it just looks like larger environments, shinier textures on a game that could have been done, you know, a generation earlier. I would really hope they could use this engine to keep doing something, but given the impending end of the PlayStation 3's life cycle, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Something I would have liked to see in this game would be actual damage models, but that's...
Oh, yeah.
It's not too big of a detraction, I guess.
Well, they have a... Nice. Don't they have, like, sparks flying around when you've taken a lot of damage? Or is that just in PSP games?
I don't know. I usually die if I take that much damage.
No, no. If you finish a mission with... on the PSP games, at least. If you finish a mission... With,
no, I know that.
With a little bit of... energy left, only a little bit, you start to see some sparks like on the body of your fighter or something.
Yeah, it's a little crackly.
Yeah.
Something I really like about this game is when you're like in close combat with an enemy Valkyrie and you get like a strong enough hit on them, you can actually knock their fast pack off and they'll just like explode everywhere and get floored. And that's always a very nice sight to see.
That's an interesting point. How did everyone approach this play-wise? Because I'm the kind of person who, and this is true for the PSP games as well, apart from, I never think of the Valkyries as a hand-to-hand kind of mecha on the same scale as, you know, a Gundam or something. So I sink all my points into missiles and beam rifles as a general rule. I try to avoid hand-to-hand stuff if I can. But, Carl, it sounds like you did a lot of hand-to-hand stuff.
Well, normally, I barely ever used Gurwalk, to be honest with you. I normally stuck to fighter mode and used the brake a lot for hard turns to do, like, all the high alpha, you know,
He means, like, really good turning.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Andrew. I got into plane attack mode.
QM69?
QM69, very important.
Indeed. But... occasionally, I would just, you know, shift a Bataroid just to land in a few punches on an enemy, and something I really enjoyed, and especially the desert area, was taking a perch on top of a cliff and, you know, sniping. That was always that was always a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was going to say, I would usually like to use, like, all three modes. I would, like, use fire to get from place to place really fast and hover around and Gearwalk a little bit, and then kind of move in and use the... Bataroid mode. Mm. Usually I use Bataroid mode a lot in like the dungeons and the bases.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I basically just cycle through the different modes and cycle through different weapons as well. But I really do not use the sniper rifle at all.
No. That was a good idea, though.
Yeah, and it makes me want to like maybe change my my control setup and try the game again using that a bit more.
Did you use the PSP
version? I've been using the PSP version, yeah, because it's just like easier for me to go into. But I realized that might not be the best one.
Yeah, the more FPS-y style controls are definitely more suited to like sniping.
Yeah.
Did anyone use the... It's not even really a zoom, but the kind of focus by clicking the stick down that you could use with the sniper rifle?
I did. I actually used that for cover a lot when I was in Bataroid mode. You could actually... you know, crouch behind rocks and such, and that's always fun.
Yeah, I found that once powered up, the sniper rifle, I mean, just uses a beam rifle, it would take out a lot of the cannon fodder in one hit, so it was just really useful in clearing up that kind of stuff.
I love how in the game, you just get accosted by, like, sniper Gearwalks if you're not looking.
Yeah.
Well, what was your impression, guys, when you first launched from the Gefion that first time, and... suddenly everyone's shooting at you and there's a bandit cap ship, like, not too far off in front of you. I mean, what was the impression now? I mean, having gone through all these Macross games, throughout Macross's history, where here's your mission, this is based on the TV series, go from point A to point B, you get off this ship, I mean, what did you guys think?
Disappointed that Dogfighter wasn't playing, but I was a little shocked at how little damage my weapons were doing. at first.
Right.
Or you're in the old busted VF0D when you start.
Yeah, yeah. You don't even get fighter mode from the beginning.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, that was really annoying. Starting the second playthrough again with the let's walk and collect all these things was really time consuming.
Well, can't you just skip those?
No. You can skip the explanations, but you can't skip the actual...
Picking up the boxes?
Yeah.
Right, right.
But anyway, what I thought was that because you've got that yellow arrow in the middle, you know, I saw those pirate ships and I saw these Gorwalks trying to shoot me down, and I just said, ignore, don't care, bye, see you later, and just held my finger on the boost button and got to where I needed to go.
Okay.
I'm doing a lot more of the bonus stuff as well. That's why I kind of ignored most of the side quests as well in the first run. But right. I'm enjoying it more now. Like, I enjoyed it both times.
Did you find it got particularly difficult towards the end if you weren't really... Because if you weren't doing side quests, then you wouldn't have had too many rank 2 Valkyries, would you?
I didn't have any. I had all rank 1 Valkyries, and it wasn't that tough. Mm-hmm. The only thing I found tough was the boss of each area. Huge mother bug queen thing.
Giant Guardians, yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty tough because of the one shot you're dead. One shot kill thing.
I found it interesting that the way the boss, like the final boss, was set up, you had to use the YF-30.
Yeah.
So, really, no matter what you... I was actually annoyed when I first realized that, because I... Story-wise, I was like, okay, we're probably going to hit the final boss now, so I'd been using a 29, and I just took a bunch of points, because, you know, you can pay for level-up points if you want to...
You spent a lot of money, basically, buying
all
this
stuff.
So I
spent a bunch of money to just max it out, thinking this is the final battle, and then they're like, no, you're in the way of 30. I'm like, oh, god damn it.
But, I mean, come on, you should have expected it, though, right?
I guess, first of all, that's a really good way of standardizing the boss experience and play balance for all players. You have the same experience. Because I think it's fairly easy to say that you can get pretty overpowered if you do side quests by the time you get to the boss. So.
Yeah.
Well, also, they had the YF-30 in cinematic, so...
Right, yeah. Right. I did find myself getting pretty addicted to the 29 more than I thought. And not Isamu's 29, either. But the one with the actual proper beam turrets on the top. Mm. Which Isamu's has a pinpoint barrier instead of that. But when you pump a lot of points into those gun turrets, you don't even have to face your enemies. The guy behind you just, alright, boom, he's dead. That was so handy.
I do find it funny. People always complain about the YF-29 design, and it's like, no, it's actually the most like combat effective Valkyrie. It's got a little pop turret.
That pop-up turret's way more effective than the YF-30's pop-up missile rack, because you can get missiles out of any Valkyrie regardless, you know. So, yeah, the 29 I thought was really, really good in this game. There are a couple of little things that didn't make a lot of sense, like how you reloaded gun pods.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, they do a little ka-chink.
They're all pump action. It's like, wait, what?
That was just weird. Gwyn, did you get all the bonus stuff, like the Minmay Guard scheme or the special Cheryl and Ranka YF-29 and all that stuff?
Oh, you mean the collector's edition / pre-order code?
Yeah, you had to download them.
Downloads?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I got those, but they were terribly... They're weak,
right? Yeah, I know. But I guess it's to be expected, because, you know, otherwise you could just start the game with those.
Exactly. Right. I also felt wrong about using them during my first playthrough, because it
looks like
a
pervert,
so out of sync with the plot. No, it was so out of sync with the plot. They're talking about this busted up, you know, VFOD and whatnot. To suddenly be in a 29 with, you know, it was this cognitive dissonance that would have taken me out of the game, so I didn't do it. Right. But the thing is, those downloadable playing Valkyries, their max stats are nowhere near as high as the regular 29 max stats, so there's no point in using them.
But you can get, like, higher rank versions of those later on.
Oh, I haven't done that.
I've got the I think I've got the rank 3 of the VF1S, and that's probably what I'm using right now, because I actually, even though it's kind of gaudy, I actually really like the pattern, the design, the scheme that it has. It's got the Milen and Minmay on it.
I like how some of the YF-29s have, like, AKB-48.
Yeah, yeah, the tartan paint schemes. Yeah.
It's funny you should mention the 1S, Renato, because one of my favorite things about the game, of course, was the double strike.
Yeah, so that's what I've got right now.
Oh, really?
The double strike on the Minmay Valkyrie.
Which basically gives you a Kamehameha.
Yes. It's really effective.
It is, but once I got used to the 29, it's like, hey, I don't have to be right in front of my enemy to point this thing.
I guess.
But sorry, Carl, you were saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, I haven't used any strike parts yet. Are they worth trying to find in the game, or...
Let me ask you a question, Kyle. Are you using the real or normal flight style?
Well, as a matter of fact, I am using the real flight style.
You don't need to use the real flight style.
I know I don't.
It's actually detrimental, because it's really hard to do the vanquish races with them.
I was able to get through them just fine, actually.
Yeah. I couldn't do it with the real. I just went back to the normal.
We haven't really mentioned the Vanquish races. Andrew, you want to explain what those are for anyone listening?
So, they thought they could be cute and give you silly... fly through a bunch of icons as a race in a certain amount of time, and you get prizes for it.
Yeah.
And yet there are no Macross R paint schemes. What's up with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, there's those terrible, like, fake afterburner segments, but they're just really bad.
Oh, the dynamic action scrolling, whatever they called them.
The trench runs.
Yeah, those are kind of annoying. The Vanquish races. Who out of these members here on this wonderful podcast actually managed to get anywhere with the Vanquish races? Because I suck at them. I'm terrible. I can't get anything. Even the really simple ones.
I've gone back and done a couple, but I'm using the YF-30, so...
I did all the Vanquish races that, like, guaranteed me a new fighter, but that's pretty much okay. It.
Because I hear that most of the fast packs are... you can only get through those.
Yeah.
I'm on the same page as you, Renato. I'm just not good at making those quick turns.
Yeah.
Or memorizing the routes, and they just annoyed me. I tried a couple, and ultimately on my first playthrough, I did maybe 80-90% of the side quests.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just ignored the races, and second time through, I was actually just refreshing my memory on the plot for this podcast, because 6 months had passed since my PlayStation 3 died. So I've ignored everything but mission plots, and have just been powering through it on just hard with a team of YF-30s. But let's talk a little bit, guys, about the New Game Plus mode when you start up a second run. It does unlock a couple of things, right?
Well, it lets you use, like, any character and any robot except for Basara.
Right.
A lot of the stuff that you had, like some of the items that you had, like the shells or whatever, you still get to keep on the second run.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I hear,
you keep all
is
your
that
stats.
When you... Hmm?
And you keep all your Valkyrie stats.
You keep
stats,
yeah. But then when you start the game again, of course, all the subquests are back. Right, so what you do is you go into the Hunter Guild, you say, okay, I want to do this subquest, and one of the subquests is, for example, find me 10 shells or 10 whatever. And you're looking around for them, and they're not anywhere. Why? Because you've already got them. You've got to go back to your inventory
and
take them out. And so, I read a lot of people were kind of annoyed with that, because they don't really tell you.
Yeah, that is kind of annoying. Plus those shells, I think it was, right? You can only hold up to 255 of them, and they're everywhere. And they just... You end up having to sell them.
Yeah.
I think those are the items. One of those items...
There's a bit of vendor trash in the game.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, from the second run through, anything that's a lower level Valkyrie part is complete rubbish. Given, you know, the point value you need to make rank 2 and rank 3 Valkyries.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
And what happens is that you start picking up all this stuff, you know, all the things that enemies drop when you kill them. And when you get something that you really need, you got to get rid of the crap that you picked up in the heat of the battle.
Right. Now, I mentioned Valkyrie parts. I know we haven't really touched on the whole kind of Valkyrie building system. And calling it a building system may be giving it too much credit. But does anyone want to kind of, you know, give the basic overview of how that works?
Your plans, either you buy them or you find them, or you get them as a quest reward. And you have, there's the three types of parts you can get. It's a what, engine, armor, and what's the last one?
Frame, I think.
Frame.
Yeah, it's frame.
And each of these type of parts has like a point value to it, and you have to just meet that point value with adding them all together.
Mm-hmm. And who actually adds them all together manually? Because you can just press one of the buttons. I think it's the triangle button, and Aisha does it for you.
Right.
I do them all manually.
Is there a better way? Because I don't know what... Yeah, what does Aisha do? Does she...
She just uses what you have, and it might not always be the most efficient.
Oh, really?
Because the problem is that towards the... Because you get better bonuses if you use, like... Oh, VF1 frame parts 3 frame parts 4 level 4, and
especially if you're building another VF1,
and that actually helps the stats, and you want to make sure that you try to keep it as efficient as possible,
right?
Not like stuffing tons of the junk part level 1 in just to get it done, because there's like a cap for each thing.
And the Valkyrie lineup is, would you call it fairly comprehensive, or was there a few that they missed there?
VF-17.
There's a few that they missed there, but I'm not too irate about it, because...
Really? Your avatar right now, I'm looking at it, is the VF-17S, so... Must be a little peeved,
right? Because I'm always proud of the pictures I take. But I think that one of the problems a lot of fans don't realize is that Valkyries are kind of interchangeable. Especially in video games. Because they all have missiles, guns, and laser cannons. And they all transform and are stupid fast and hit each other. So I don't really care that the VF-17 wasn't in the game, because they just give you a 171 with a black paint scheme anyway.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, it's like practically the same.
So, were there any Valks that weren't included, though, that you would have liked?
I would just say the VF4, but that's because it was actually in animation at some point. You know? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of important.
Mm-hmm.
Important enough to get a toy. Mm-hmm. Against all odds, but, like I'm not gonna ask them to put in, like, the VF9 or the VF5000. Mm-hmm. The 5000 maybe, because that was in Dynamite 7, but, you know. It's not necessary.
I'm okay with the ones that they put in. Because the PSP games had every Valkyrie, except the Lint Seeker.
Really?
Yeah.
Because the PS2 game had the Lint Seeker.
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
So what you're saying here is that if we look at this as a platform, if we're using Sony platforms, you can have every Valk ever, accumulatively.
Right.
Just not in any one title.
Right, unfortunately. But, no, I mean, the PSP games are as close as you're going to get to doing everything.
Right. I did miss the VF4. I was hoping to have that in there. Of course, I wouldn't have minded having the Metal Siren either, but that's another discussion.
It is a complete other discussion.
Well, yeah, after they actually put in Macross 2 missions into the last PSP game, I was like, well, now we can get these Valks in more games, hopefully.
They had the Gilgamesh as well, and the little the blue one. Whatever the little brew one was.
And it wasn't to be. So, you get to this New Game Plus, guys, and apart from Basara, you're allowed to have any pilot, any assistant, co-pilot, whatever you want to call them, in your Valkyrie. Even if it's a one-seater Valkyrie, you've got two people in there, right? Who is your ideal lineup? Who have you been using as your team?
Right now I have Big Clan, I have Nora, and Milia. So it's like the girls' team.
I tend to just swap around all the time. But I think I'm on the... I'm using Max. And I can't remember who I'm using for the support character. But, you know, because you can select support characters for your wingmen as well, right? So...
Right.
And you can command them in the mission. Mm-hmm. So... Mm-hmm. I make sure that I have Ranka at least somewhere.
All right, you want to explain why?
Because she has one of the best support skills, which is, if I'm remembering correctly, all the enemies stand still for a few seconds.
And, oh, is that what she does?
And that's how I managed to beat the bosses. Like, the boss of each section...
Yeah, she basically triples the amount of frame rate loss.
Yeah, but you can still maneuver, though.
I usually keep Mion with me because she can resurrect fallen allies.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what Voices does.
Or the stand-in song for Voices, rather.
Yeah, standard Voices.
Yeah, I put it in there.
No love for Misa?
Oh, with the Mac. I never... It didn't do enough damage for me.
No. I found it did on the first playthrough, but, well, for say, one or two chapters, but after that, yeah. But
yeah, that was it, yeah.
I always thought it was amazing that even if you're underground in a, you know, ruin, it's like, Macross cannon fire! And
yeah, no, I was using...
come from?
I was using Misa as a support for my Valkyrie, and I made sure that I had Ranka in somebody else's, because, you know, who wants to share a Valkyrie?
Unfortunately, Sarah's isn't as effective as it should be.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like the Song of Death, right? It doesn't really do that much.
But I replaced the song with The Touch from Transformers.
Oh, yeah.
And would always, like, get up to the part where it's like, you got the touch, and then just cut off right there.
Well, I found that, yeah, Misa was fun to use, but especially earlier in the game, if I had the double strike on the VF1S and Misa, that was like just a laser barrage of doom.
It's a laser show.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
またお前の歌か。それにしてもシャロン、こんな可愛い子ちゃんまで用意してくれるとはね。
私はあなたに最高の空を見せてあげたいだけ。
そうかよ。借りだなんて思わないですね。よっしゃ、行くぜ。
I just thought there were funny things like the 171 EX is holding an invisible gun pod all the time.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
It has the same animation as the regular one. That is, that has a gun pod, but the EX has the big beam gun on its arm. So when it fires, it actually has it holding it like it's a gun pod.
Mm.
So it's like just they reuse the animation. But
I totally did not notice that.
Yeah. I like how there's a VF-22 and VF-22S in the game.
Right.
Which seems like padding.
Right. Something really annoying I've noticed is when you are in the middle of combat and you accidentally press the purge fast pack button.
Oh!
And
yeah,
you just purge everything and get your ass kicked.
Right. I'm wondering what the deal was with some Valkyries having to do a backflip when they transform.
I think that's because the transformation is so simple. They wanted to spruce it up.
Okay, well, look, let's wrap this up then. I suppose the question is then, of course, we've got this plot. We've got characters that are on Macross merchandise, physical merchandise. We've got an actual setting in the timeline. So, is it canon? And, well, I put it as canon as everything else, or anything, how everything is and isn't canon in Macross these days. The fact that there's no resolution to what happens to everyone at the end makes me think that maybe in the Macross universe, it's a dude in the cinema watching Do You Remember Love writing a doujinshi, which he then turns into a fanfic and posts online. But yeah, that's what the game's based on. It's a game within the Macross universe for all I know, but...
It's as canon as Macross or the end to VFX2, which is totally right. Why there's the nuns, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't remember what the end of VFX2 was. There were two endings, weren't there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, you destroyed the UN Spacey, now there has to be a new one. It's like, not really.
Oh, okay.
There was a new UN Spacey in Macross 7.
They were corrupt or something, right? Mm.
So my one concern, I know I've said that, you know, I wish they'd use this engine to pump out another couple of games. Hope, you know, not necessarily with the full original Macross cast so they could save money. Just more original characters, you know. Because the basic gameplay I found was really fun. Even when it was challenging, it was kind of a comfort food kind of game. I could just sit down and I used to cruise around those levels and just turn the camera so I was looking behind me over the Valkyrie and pan around and... I just found it kind of relaxing in a way, despite all the missile spam. but will this be, you know, the last great Macross game? Because the two games after this, the first one's been a smart mobile phone game. The one after that will be a mobile phone game. I think whenever the new series comes out, whatever it is, we may well get a PlayStation 3 game, which is, you know, a telling of that series, much like your normal anime tie-in. Will we get another game with this much original content? I think it's a tough sell given what a niche product it is. And the fact that Japanese developers aren't really making stuff for the PS4 and the escalated development costs that the PS4 brings with it. Yeah. So yeah. I really hope
it
isn't.
So I guess we're lucky that we got anything at all.
We yeah. are. The fact that this yeah. game exists...
Exists like, is quite amazing.
Mecha fans are mecha fans. They think, well, we have all these Gundam games. Of course we should have a Macross game. It's not like that, you know. And I'm really impressed we got it. And I intend to play it a few more times.
Yeah, me too. It's a good game.
But yeah, hopefully it's not the last one we get.
It is definitely one of the most ambitious of the Macross games.
Mm.
I would say it's the most ambitious. Unless you include... Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Ultimate Frontier and all those things where they try to include every Valkyrie in there. But this is, like, from what Gwyn said, right? Lots of original settings, original characters, original story. That's a lot of work.
Right. Even yeah. in, like, today, at this point in the gaming cycle with, like, Gundam Side Stories coming out, only one of the chapters or one of the games in that package is original content. The rest is remastered, old original
right.
content.
Right.
And Destiny, Gundam man. Units sell a lot more. Destiny. Yeah, you got to go. I don't know. They're not going to beat the original Blue Destiny, not with that perspective change. But anyway, Renato.
There were new characters in the PSP games as well, right? The Moonlight Squadron, whatever they were called. So you had this Kagura or Kaguto or something like that. This kid, and then this girl as well. And I always thought, even though they don't have backgrounds, they don't really have that kind of like very simplistic personalities. I wish that they would have a backstory and there would be an original campaign for the PSP games. And that's basically what this game is now. So
hey,
I'm very
what
glad.
What about Eddie and the other guy from the PS2 game?
Yeah, I don't remember them. I mean, I know that you were like in the Purple Squadron or something like that.
Yeah, or you were in the Apollo Squadron if you did.
Apollo Squadron?
Yeah.
There were... Yeah, you're right. There were characters, but I wasn't very interested in them.
Emma Granger or whatever.
Yeah, Heather Granger.
I hope we do get more original content. I mean, I've always said that with Macross, you know, like for the PC Engine games, and even with those games that spun off from Macross 2, original content's original content. Pre-PlayStation 3 HD gaming era, it was cheaper to make new stories and characters and original content on a gaming platform than animation-wise. These days, that isn't necessarily the case. Yeah. So I hope this isn't the end of original Macross content.
It is kind of a shame that there isn't as much of a PC gaming market in Japan, because I think there's potential there, you know, for for like homegrown or Kickstarter stuff. Because that's what Keiji Inafune's been doing. mm-hmm. with Mighty Number 9.
Oh, and there's the Oculus Rift Macross game.
Yeah, I saw that. That's a fan game, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's it's a fan project, but
even doujin games like Gunhound and Gigantic Army getting on Steam, you know.
Mm. Well, you know, fingers crossed we get something else. But in the meantime, look, I know there's been a lot of people asking questions about this game. They've been hesitant to import it because they've heard how dense it is. So I'd like to wrap up everyone with your impressions on, you know, is this game worth the import? For a Macross fan, what does it have to offer? Start with Renato.
Totally worth the import for a Macross fan, because Macross fans all around the world, they love the characters and they love the mecha, right? You can love one or the other, or both. If you like Macross, you're probably into either one of those two things, or the music as well. And it's all in there. So there's really not that much of a reason that I can say to anyone you shouldn't get it, unless they really don't like to hear Japanese. Because this game is full of Japanese.
Actually, I have a random question. Did anybody try the Autobot battle system?
The Autobot? What?
Oh, really easy mode?
That's only if you choose easy mode at the beginning. In more normal mode, hard mode, you can't do it. Right. So basically, this is something that was really kind of strange, and it kind of mitigated a lot of the niche within the niche things that we were describing before, because, you know, mecha games aren't actually that mainstream over here. They're not popular, really. So people, Macross fans who just like maybe the songs or the characters or the character interactions or the stories, they could buy the game and enjoy how the story develops, like a kind of a visual novel thing. And then when there's fighting, then there's action scenes, they can press the select button and the computer will play for you. Which, you know,
hacks.
To gamers, it's kind of like, you know, it defeats the point. But I guess that is also a thing that they thought about to try and maximize sales ever so slightly.
And I think we should point out that once you select your difficulty level, you can't change it once you start playing, right?
Yeah, so I've never tried the auto fight function or whatever it's called.
Kyle, thoughts, impressions, recommendations?
Well, at first I really did not know what to do, but once I had the translation guide, I was able to start hammering through this game, and I really started to enjoy it.
I think we should bring that up.
Yeah.
Red Shoulder Scanlations did a full guide
for
this game, and it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Zoroastris.
It held my hand through like 90% of that game. Mm-hmm. And I am so thankful to have had it at my side. Thank you to... What's his name?
I think it's Zoroastris or Zoroastris.
Yeah. Whoever you are, thank you.
He put a lot of work into it.
He did. He put a lot of nice pictures into it, and... Well, not pictures, but
he made the map diagrams and stuff
which are probably better than what was in the official book,
right?
But so you're saying you'd recommend it, Carl?
Oh, I would definitely recommend it. I had so much fun with this game. It's one of my favorite games I've ever played, to be honest with you.
Wow, ringing endorsement.
I'm not trying to suck up or anything. It's just, I don't know, I just, I'm not really a RPG guy,
mm-hmm.
but something like this, I could sit down and actually use skill in, and if you're a Macross fan, buy it immediately.
Andrew?
Well, I'm just gonna again say, yeah, you should buy it, definitely. I will say, though, I know some people are a little, cautious about the price, because not everyone is used to, what Japanese media costs. And
and there's no digital version.
There is no digital version, no.
Yeah.
But that just means you can get your case signed by a bunch of people.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of depth to it. It's just fun. I like the characters, and just being able to play with some Valkyries on my big TV.
Mm. You know? If you had to compare it to, because I know you play a lot of mech-based games. I mean, how does it compare to a lot of the other stuff you play? Like, does it feel different? Does it control different?
Is
it...
It's a bit more arcadey and simple in some ways, but there's a lot of depth to just kind of switching your weapons and knowing when to heal and when to use your skills and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just very well designed overall. Mm-hmm. It's not quite as like seat of your pants, crazy flying armored core 4 answer, but it's still pretty good.
Gotcha. You had to mention that game, didn't you?
I don't even have my copy anymore. I need to get another one.
Alright, well, look, I suppose we'll wrap it up there for this episode. I'd like to thank you guys for your time. I know it's getting pretty late in your neck of the woods. Thank you for spending time with us here. To put that in perspective, it's a gorgeous day outside here in Tokyo on Sunday, and Renato and I are, well, sitting in probably relatively dark enclosed rooms talking about video games. So the things we sacrifice for Macross 30.
Well, I was out earlier, and I had to go back in to get my sunglasses, because this is the first time this year and that I'm using my sunglasses in Japan. It's really bright, really warm.
So you're sporting that Aegis Fokker look, is what you're telling me.
Yes.
Why wasn't Aegis in this?
Get
thing?
Free!
Why? He should have been. Well, it was VF-19. Was.
Well, I guess I'll be calling on all your expertise when we do another gaming podcast. Hopefully not too far down the track. But in the meantime...
Macross 31.
Yeah. They're just giving up on being like an anniversary production now. They just don't want to bother with naming. They just slap a number on the end. Yeah, it'll be the same for the anime as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, I gotta say, Macross 30 is not a great name for a game.
I know, right? What happened to parts 1 to 29, Renato? Yeah. Alright, but on that note, I'm gonna fold out here. So this is a Macross Speaker Podcast, signing off.